Welcome to 50 Words for Murder, the podcast where we delve into the stories behind the headlines. I'm your host, Justin, and on today's episode, this was recorded originally on YouTube. We have pulled the audio and repurposed it to the podcast so that you can take it on the go and listen to it at your convenience. If you would like to see these in real time, live, with any of the things that we're showing on the screen, you can go to YouTube and follow me at Justin on TikTok. You can also reach this YouTube channel by going to justinontiktok.com, going underneath my photo on the far right, and you'll see the YouTube link. Enjoy this episode. Hey, you guys, hope y'all are having a good evening or afternoon or morning or whenever you're watching this. I am sorry that I've had to move this live multiple times today based on the fact that, you know, just things kind of kept coming up and whatnot. But we are able to do it now, and there is a lot of stuff to show you. I'm glad that we moved it simply for the fact that there's more information now to talk about than we had before. So I'm excited to kind of have this a little bit later and talk to you guys, but sorry about that. And if you're catching on the replay, but you know how it goes. First, we got to go through and pay the bills, right? Do that. As a lot of y'all know, we have a podcast. I have been much better at rolling these over to the podcast when we're done. So you can check it out. If you can't listen to the whole thing or you need to take it on the go, obviously you won't be able to see what we put up on screen, but you'll be able to kind of see that and, you know, go from there. Next thing, of course, I want to talk to you guys about are the books that we have. The first one, of course, is Boundaries. You guys see this one at night, every night that we do this. Basically, this book right here, if you are one of the 26% of millennials and Gen Z that are no contact with a family member, need a way to explain it to your kids that doesn't vilify that person, that teaches them the importance of boundaries, this is the book to get. You can get it at justinontiktok.com or in the TikTok shop. And in the TikTok shop, they're actually on sale till the end of the week. I kind of extended the Mother's Day sale, which leads us into this one, Surprises Are Okay, Secrets Are Not. This book is basically designed to help teach your kids, grandkids, that, hey, you should not be keeping secrets, especially for adults, and to tell a trusted adult, and it has a good Q&A at the end that you can have age-appropriate discussions with your kids. So without further ado, let's get started talking about this stuff that we have tonight. So I don't really know what order I want to do this in, but I think what we'll do is I want to delve into the interview last night. If a lot of y'all haven't seen the interview last night with Jesse Weber with the family, we're going to play that in a bit. And if you are watching this on TikTok, because I'm simultaneously have my phone right here streaming TikTok as well, I am doing this on YouTube. So if you hear me or see me say something or play something, you're not going to hear it on the TikTok side. You have to jump over to YouTube. Just real quick side note on that. YouTube. It's the same name on here, Justin on TikTok. You can also get to it by going to the link in my bio, justinontiktok.com. Underneath my picture at the far right is the YouTube icon, and you can click that as well. And lastly, for the YouTube family, if you are new here, make sure to hit that subscribe button, trying to grow this channel. That would do me just a massive, massive solid for y'all to do that, and I would appreciate it. So that being said, the first thing I want to talk to you about this is I'm going to show y'all some text messages that were sent to me tonight. These text messages are from back in 2022, and it was when Micah was involuntarily institutionalized. And I just did a video of this on TikTok a few minutes ago. So if you can't see it on TikTok, you can go back and watch that video and see what I'm talking about. And I left it open so that you can do screenshots as well. But I'm going to go and throw this one up here so y'all can kind of see it. I know it's hard to read, but this was sent. This is from Sierra Francis. This is her sister. And this is again from 22. And you can talk about Heather Wilson. You know, that's what it's saying. Do you have her husband's contact information? But here's where it gets important. Okay. We found out the reason why we cannot get to Micah, the reason why police are twisting everything that we said, the reason why there are guards keeping our family out of the hospital. So I'm going to pause there real quick. They would try to go to the hospital to get to Micah, and there were guards stationed there to prevent her family from getting into this hospital. Okay. That's what this is referring to. The reason why they never made a police report in Horry County when everything went down at my house is because John Paul's best friend, who was also head of security at Solid Rock, but was also married to the head of Horry County Police, Heather Wilson. The tangled webs we weave, guys. You know? The tangled webs we weave. So, his best friend at the time was head of security at Solid Rock. Dude was married to the head of the Horry County Police Department, or, you know, lieutenant in the police department. And he goes on to say, our friend who's an officer said that Heather, the lieutenant, called and was getting all the information from her department. Our friend was the police officer who happened to be on call to go to the doctor when Micah passed out, is what the rest of that says. I'll go ahead and throw the other one up there and so you can see it. She said that JP was being a jerk to them and was calling and asking for information as well. The problem is Heather Wilson is the member of Solid Rock Church, as a member of Solid Rock, who is giving all the information to John Paul. She's the one in charge of Horry County Police Department who's calling and gaining all the information because of her rank from officers who reported to the scene, meaning that they forced her into an institution, and to make sure that JP got all the information fed to him, she was trying to get information from somebody else. That is kind of what this is alluding to. Not even alluding to, that's what this text message is saying. Then she goes on, then the other person's asking questions. The person says, I've not told certain people, but here's what it says. There's a person named Linda, who's an elder that Micah had help. Basically, Linda helped Micah to leave town and come to Sierra's house. Micah said that she trusts Linda over everyone else. Linda knows JP made Micah leave and all that. She was heavily involved on the day JP was blowing up y'all's phone, but she doesn't know your perspective. Okay, so he's got a lawyer who helped work to get diagnoses and get her committed, get a medical POA. The same lawyer who happens to have property 200 acres that back up to the park that she was found in, conveniently, the same lawyer who's under FBI investigation as a person of interest, along with JP, and the Dare to Care mission, okay, Africa mission in regards to finances and things like that. Absolutely, you know, look, I'm not a big believer in a lot of coincidences, like one or two things happening, you know, whatever, coincidence. There's a lot of coincidences here, a lot. And, you know, John Paul, in his little world of Horry County, of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, had enough power, money, and influence, it appears, to have a lot of control over a bunch of little things. And people in the comments on YouTube are saying about a judge, and that wouldn't surprise me either. I would be very curious, and I don't know if there's a way to do it. That would take somebody, maybe like a PI or somebody involved in this case, but I'd be very curious if they dove deeper into this thing. You know, if the judge that signed off, if more people who were involved in this were part of Solid Rock Church. I would also be very curious to know if the person who owned the funeral home where Micah was cremated at was part of Solid Rock Church. I don't know how to find out that information. Maybe somebody else could. Maybe somebody else knows. Maybe we talk to Kyler about it and see what they say. But Yeah. Interesting, right? Interesting. So the next thing I want to talk about is JP's TikTok. That's right, guys. JP got a TikTok for a couple days. He was up. Nothing was posted. He followed one person. And yesterday, within a three-hour period, he went through what I would describe as a manic spiral and posted like 12 or 13 videos in a three-hour period of time, all about Micah. You know, he also posted, I think, three Bible verses where he took creative liberties with those Bible verses. Personally speaking, I do believe the account was his. The videos that he was posting were not public anywhere else. I've not seen them anywhere else. The one person he was following was somebody who I believe was working with him at the time, working with JP, a content creator that was sharing stuff from JP's perspective. So I believe that it was him. However, you know, he garnered a lot of following really, really quick. And then today with it, like, it's gone. Just completely gone, wiped off, shut down, gone. So I don't know what to describe about that, but you know, that's the case on that. So more to come there. I have no idea. He's also, I think I need to make this very clear too, if you haven't heard this, since the information about the FBI has come out, basically saying, hey, we're investigating for this Dare to Care mission thing. Tom Winslow, the attorney, and JP have been silent. It's been crickets, absolute crickets. You know, that's it right there. That's the sound of it. So the only thing that he posted again was pictures of Mike and nothing about him. No, you know, pictures of him talking or explaining his side, anything like that. So that being said, now what I want to get into is what y'all really want to get into. A lot of y'all have seen it. A lot of y'all haven't seen it. A lot of y'all probably want to talk about it, is the video that came over last night that was part of a lawn crime sidebar with Jesse Weber, and it was Sierra Francis, who is Micah's sister, and Michael Francis, who is Micah's father. So if you are on TikTok, just to let you know, you will not be able to see or hear what I'm referring to. It's going to play through here. However, if you want to jump over, you can. We're going to be pausing because the way that this works, I can't play the whole thing in its entirety. YouTube doesn't like that. So we'll have to stop every like minute or two and we can talk about it, or a couple minutes, whatever, and talk about it. But you know, it's very interesting, guys. And I'm going to get it fast forward and ready to go here. And, you know, play it right now. Let me get it queued up. All right, here we go.
Paul Miller's lawyer, Russell Long, said, quote, "It has come to light that Micah Miller struggled with mental illness, specifically bipolar disorder, which when not properly managed led to paranoid episodes and self-destructive behavior. Some reports made by her in the recent past are nonsensical." He also added that a ruling of suicide by law enforcement completely exonerates Pastor Miller of any wrongdoing. Well, I am joined right now by Micah's father, Michael Francis. Thank you so much for coming on. And before we even get started, I just have to say, I am so sorry for your loss, your family's loss. And as I mentioned to you before we started recording, I know this can't be easy talking about this and having this amplified and everybody speaking about it. So I know this must be a very difficult time. So my heart goes out to you and your family, and really appreciate you taking the time to come here and talk a little bit more about it.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to start off. How are you and the family doing right now?
We're struggling. You know, we're more united than ever as a family. You know, this is something that has really caused us to drop any little petty arguments or something and focus on what's the important at this moment. So, you know, we have grieved off and on, but we've also been in fight mode off and on, as far as legally and, you know, and speaking out for my.
Again, real quick, because you have to pause through this thing to talk again, otherwise it makes the YouTube gods unhappy. But just to let y'all know too, with this, there's going to be some, if you haven't heard it yet, it's going to be pretty mind blowing. There's going to be some information that they shed, and we'll talk about it. And we're going to let him talk again. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we have to do it for the YouTube sake, but we'll let it keep going.
Micah.
Let's talk about that, because I want to be very clear here. Despite the findings from law enforcement that Micah had died by her own hand, that the sheriff's office saying John Paul was not in Robeson County when Micah died, do you believe there is more to the story, correct?
Yes. It's there's a lot of details that they did not cover, and because it was equivalent in their eyes to previous self-inflicted wounds, I believe the law allows them to do less work. It does not prevent them from doing more work. And since there were multiple shell casings found and a live round found, it already didn't make much sense. So it would seem that they would automatically do a complete toxicology, not just blood alcohol, and a complete autopsy, which they did not do. And we're just devastated that they didn't, because John Paul rushed the cremation process.
Okay, so I just want to pause there for a minute and talk about that. If you caught what he said, they found multiple casings and a live round, okay? And let me put myself back up here so y'all can see me. And here's a few things that we want to talk about with this. First of all, somebody just said, who does test shots before a self-inflicted bang? Correct. But if you go back to the fisherman's story, the fisherman says that he heard a shot, not multiple shots. Okay, the fisherman said that he heard one shot. And he heard somebody whimpering or crying. Then he heard a shot. And then it was quiet. Not multiple. Also, JP, like he said, we all know he rushed the cremation. The rumor is that, or the understanding slash rumor is that he made the family sign a consent to cremate, which I guess would before he'd let them see the body, because again, he's got medical POA over her. All right. And that was probably a way, because the family is grieving under duress. They want to see their child. They want to see their sister, and they signed it to see her, but they did take pictures, you know, and you'll hear that more, but we'll let him continue.
So, and like, well, during the briefing, we pressed pretty hard for more information and such. And the sheriff's office was trying to compress the briefing for us. And then they gave us a flash drive. It doesn't sound like Micah during the 911 call. She's so slow and so, you know, but then later there are, I haven't even heard them myself, honestly. I have someone who's going through all that for me and filtering the information, because otherwise the more information I get that sounds off, the more furious I get, and I need to be able to focus and control my emotions. So, but there was screaming going on and such, and that's not something indicative of a self-inflicted, you know, that's sounds like a conflict, sounds like a, you know, a fight. And, with the bruising on her hands and on her arm, scratch.
So I'm going to pause again real quick here to talk about what he just said regarding the 911 call. If you heard, you know, kind of what he was implying there, he said that when he listened to the 911 call, it didn't sound like her. It wasn't, not only didn't it sound like her, but it wasn't even the speed that she spoke off. You know, it was a little bit slower. It wasn't, you know, he feels that it wasn't a good representation or a reflection of hers. And he'll say later on that he believes it's AI. Now what he's getting into is the fact that he feels that there was a struggle. So yeah, that's where we're at. So let's keep going.
Scratches on her hands, indicating defensive wounds. So very frustrating.
When you say defensive wounds, is that something that was told to you by a medical professional when you talked about multiple casings there? Where did you get this information? And when you brought this information to law enforcement or brought it or mentioned to them, what did they say?
Hey, come, guys.
Whoa. Go from out of pills to refill.
Okay, as far as finding out, the park ranger took us back to the scene and pointed out, here's where she would have been standing. Here's where the shell casings and the live round were, which also doesn't make sense. She knew how to use a weapon. She got the weapon for self-protection. She told me days beforehand, you know, Dad, I really feel like I need a weapon for protection. And she knows how to use it. She's qualified. She's been through training. She's not going to charge the weapon and eject a live round. She already knows. The first rule of gun, you know, use is knowing the condition of the gun. So we got the information about the shells. I mean, I did it directly from the park ranger. And then when we brought that up to law enforcement, they just said, well, they had no answer. They really just had no answer why.
So let me bring this one back up because I don't want to go too far without saying something regarding the firearm. If you heard what he said that that Mike had called him several days prior saying that she needed to get a firearm for protection. And here's what I'll say. One thing that's been a little curious to me this entire time is that she went in and she bought a Sig Sauer. Okay. A Sig is a very nice, if you want to use nice, it is a higher end firearm for a one and done type of deal for somebody who doesn't have a lot of money. So we know that as a used firearm, she spent, I think, you know, $500 on it, which is probably a pretty good deal for that weapon. But that's not a weapon that one buys if they need to use it one time. You know? And a lot of people have been saying this entire time, hey, you know, she needed a firearm, you know, to protect herself. And now the father is saying that you know, she made this phone call to him. That's kind of what's going on. So anyways, I'll let it continue.
You know, any kind of, not even a speculation. They didn't even say, well, she probably did this, probably did that. They just said, this is what we have. And, I mean, there is what would be an apparent bullet hole in a tree, which I have a picture of. And they just didn't seem to put the effort forth. So we're very disappointed in that.
And the defensive wounds, was that from the park ranger too? Okay. Yeah.
No, we looked at her hands during the viewing. We took pictures of her from the viewing. It was the worst day of my life. And she had scratches on her arms and, I mean, on her hand. And the coroner in training had the chief coroner with her, but she spoke out and said, well, maybe that's from when they retrieved her from the water. And I said, okay, of course, maybe. So, you know, was there blood in those scratches and such? They had no answer. Very disappointing. So I basically said the scratches indicate some type of scuffle or something, because the area where she was, there was no trees or anything anyway. There was no trees.
So I'm going to pause again real quick, and because I don't want to get too far away from this or removed from this. He's got pictures of it. There was a bullet in the tree. So again, going back to the fisherman's story, he heard one shot, according to him, but multiple casings on the ground, a live round on the ground, a bullet in the tree. You know, that's two shots at a minimum. And when her dad is bringing things up, like the scratches, like, you know, was there blood in the scratches? Meaning, like, if there were blood in the scratches, then it was probably, they were created before she passed away. And again, no checking for gunshot residue, no checking for an autopsy, no checking for toxicology, no investigation, no formal confirmation, at least nothing that's been shown, that JP was actually in the truck that was driving. They have confirmation that his truck was somewhere, but not that he was in that truck. You know? Anyways, food for thought. We'll let it keep going.
in the water, there was nothing there that would have scratched her hands the way they were. I mean, like yeah. this. You know? So, you know, it showed it indicated that there was, you know, some type of pressure. You know, that's where the bruise was, and just, you know.
Well, Michael, here's the thing. I hate to ask you this, and I know it must be difficult to revisit it. But when you mentioned the 911 phone call, when that came out, I think a lot of people who were suspecting there might be something there, they were convinced that that was the end of the story. When you mentioned that 911 phone call, you said there's something about the way that Micah sounded on the phone that sounded odd to you. What do you mean by
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Yeah. Very slow speech. She's a very happy, go-lucky, excitable person. And she, it was too slow. It was very slow. It was metered. It could have been done with an AI type of previous recordings where somebody would have had those words from her previously or, you know, whatever. And so it just doesn't make sense that he wouldn't go up there.
Go to motionready.com to add this to your video and that and that.
You gotta love the ads, guys.
Fire.
Do you have a theory as to what happened? Because authorities are saying, you know, they crossed out his alibi of where he was. Do you have a theory as to what happened? And again, I know this is sensitive, so if you don't want to share it, I understand. But do you have a theory as to what you believe happened to your daughter?
Okay, well, I'll share what we spoke to about with the authorities, the sheriff in North Carolina. Also, as far as with his location, we've seen pictures of his truck. It had dark windows. Was it even him in there? Where's pictures of him physically there? We haven't seen those. They've not been produced.
So just want to pause here because, again, we have to keep the YouTube gods happy. You know, that's kind of what I was saying. There's been no pictures produced to the family, to us, to anybody that indicates that he was actually in the vehicle. His truck was there. His license plates were there. But, you know, there's 29 vehicles registered to that church. So there have to be multiple vehicles somewhere else that he could have been in. I'm not saying that that's what the case is. I'm just saying, as somebody just, you know, eloquently put it, a license plate reader does not make an alibi. A license plate reader doesn't show that, hey, that's where you were, you know. And what we learned earlier on in this is by the time he left Charleston, the way that he went back was not the fastest way to Myrtle Beach. And he could have made it to that park by the time this whole event occurred. And that's based off of the license plate readers and the stamps. It's also been confirmed that JP's dad lives fairly close to the gas station. That she supposedly stopped at, or that there's evidence that she stopped, however you want to word that. So again, just another interesting kind of tidbit. Somebody asked about the body cam footage. There is none. There is none. We all have to just kind of take everybody's word for this. And Robeson County does have a history of, you know, not always being on the up and up. So I think that it's also interesting that they decided to asked the FBI for help. And I do want to clarify that real quick. They've asked the FBI for help in regard to this investigation. I have not heard one way or the other if the FBI decided to help on this or not. But I think that that's a pretty interesting indication of possibly things to come. At the same time, I feel like the FBI probably would take it on solely for the fact that if they already have one investigation where JP is a person of interest, not a suspect, just a person of interest, then they might want to take this on because it could be related to the crimes that they're already investigating or could be another offshoot of what they're trying to do. So let's go ahead and keep this going. We don't have that much longer with it.
If someone else has them, we would like to see them to prove that he was there, because otherwise it could be anybody in that truck. So the theory would be that because she had multiple tracking devices put on her car previously, that she was followed out to the park or forced to go out to the park. And they either follow her out there or she, which is, there's no reason for her to go out there. That's the main point as well. She's never been out there. We don't go up there. It's not a family spot. And she was off the trail enough into a park ranger only area that nobody knows about. And so the theory would be that she was either tracked, and then they said, well, we didn't find a tracking device. Well, they could have removed it at the park. When the car was at the park and then it was collected by the authorities, they didn't check for a tracker, which blew my mind. They said, oh, we have all the evidence and everything. We asked them, was there a tracker on her car? And they said, well, we didn't check. And we were flabbergasted. This happened over and over during that interview. Why didn't you check that? We know that there was 3 or 4 trackers put on her vehicles. Why wouldn't you check to see if she was followed? They said, oh, there's no cameras, but we know she wasn't followed.
All right, let's stop there for that one, because I think there's a lot that was just said with that whole thing. I want to go back. You know, obviously he talks about the fact that where she was found was an area that's not really, that's really more for park rangers, so not for traditional civilians. This is not a park that she had ever been to that had any type of sentimental meaning to them as a family, one that, you know, they weren't really aware of. And she happens to find herself in an area that's apparently hard to find in a park ranger area. On top of that, like he's saying, he would ask a lot of questions. And somebody in TikTok just said this, and I agree. Her dad, Michael here, he is asking the best questions that anybody has asked of these people at this point. And they're so simple and they're so straightforward, but they're the questions that really need answers. Why didn't you check? Why didn't you check for this? And there's no answers for any of those. This is a woman who had at least 4 trackers that she knew of put on her car, and they didn't check her car for a tracker. You know, that's odd. And if there was somebody else there, as he said, they could have removed that tracker prior. Right. So it's very interesting. He's asking the right questions, but it really feels like this investigation from the get-go was botched. Let's write it up, you know, as her taking her own life, calling it a day, wrap it up in a neat little bow, and off it goes. I don't think that JP or anybody expected the social media attention that this case is now garnering and getting. And I'm glad for it. And I think that's part of the reason why he probably took his social media down. Although I don't really want to guess for him, because he's, in my opinion, he's the one that's a lunatic. But anyways, let's just keep going.
Her car is just out here. And I said, well, there's no trackers. They said no tracker. I said, well, they could have removed it after they did the deed. So then Micah's mother, Angelita, she said, pretend this is Micah's hand. And she asked me, grab this hand. And then she pulled it up, you know, and said, it looks like someone squeezed her hand and raised it up and shot. And there are defensive wounds from it and such. Mm. And that's the general idea of our theory, that somebody crushed her hand to hold the gun up to her head while she's fighting. Either them or someone else held her other hand or her other arm back, because there's bruising on it from squeezing. And they forced it to look like that was self-inflicted. And a couple of rounds went off during the scuffle. One ejected was live. And then it finally happened the way they would want it to happen. And then dumped her in the water.
Hey, how's your night going?
I'm going to pause here too after we get to this ad, because I want to talk
probably about
that. I want to pause where we can talk about that. So you kind of heard what he said, and they took pictures of this. Let me get my dumb face back up. So they took pictures of this as well. So he saw her hands before she was cremated, saw the bruising. And what he's saying is that it looked like somebody forced their hand around hers and forced her hand up to her head. And made her basically forced her to pull the trigger, so it would look like she took her own life. Bearing in mind that this is a woman who said not terribly long ago to her sister, if I end up with a bullet in my head, it was JP. So, you know, I don't know exactly where I stand. I'm leaning more towards this was foul play at this point, despite what the police report said. But at the beginning of all this, even if you're still at a, hey, this is 100% self-inflicted, she did it to herself, then I still think that what we need to be doing here is not looking at who pulled the trigger, if that's the case, but why the trigger was pulled. So either way, you know, you have an implication of JP being somehow involved, no matter which way you go at this point, in my opinion. So let's keep it going.
40 meters away from where the shell casings in the gun was found. The water doesn't flow there. It's a slough. It's still. It just sinks. And it actually flows when it sinks, when it recesses, it goes the other direction from where she was found. So her body, even if it was put in the water right there, would not have flowed the direction where she was found. It would flow the other way. So it would be possible that the incident occurred right there and the shell casings, and then the gun was dumped in the water right there. And then she was carried farther, 40 meters back into a little bit more secluded area where she was found.
So Sierra Francis now joins the conversation. This is Micah's sister. Sierra, thank you so much for coming.
I'm going to stop there before Sierra starts talking and let's talk about what he just said. So her body was found 40 meters away from the casing, guys, 40 meters. The area that she was found was an area that's basically a still. Water doesn't really flow there. It just kind of sits. And the where she was found would not have been the direction of the water flow anyways. So he feels that she was carried there, brought there, and dumped in the water, which could explain, A, why she was away, you know, 40 meters away from the casing, why she was not near the stuff that she brought. You know, and I think that they said it was like a 25, 30-minute walk from where her car was to where this went, you know, with a bag, with a firearm, with this heavy thing weighing on you, et cetera. And again, it's going back to a park that she has no connection to, apparently. And it is kind of weird. I'll say this. You know, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but most of the time when women want to take their own lives, it's very rare that it's with a firearm, number one. But two, there's typically, you know, a method to the madness on that, so to speak, meaning that, you know, most women, you know, want the family to find them. That's part of it. Or don't want the family to find them. So they'll call or make arrangements so police or somebody else can take care of it. So their family doesn't have to go through that. They try to keep it as clean as they possibly can. And they might do something that might be a little bit more sentimental to them. Yeah, it's very quiet, as somebody just said. And so this is really quite the opposite of that, you know? But let's again, now that Sierra's here, let's keep talking and we'll see what she's got to say.
Coming on, as I told your father, I just want to say again, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry for what you and your family are going through. Our hearts go out to you guys. And again, really appreciate you taking the time and being so generous with your time to come on and talk a little bit more about this. So I've already spoken to your father a lot about what you guys believe might have happened here. I want to talk to you about this legal claim that you have filed against Mr. Miller and the church. Walk us through what that claim is and what you're hoping to get from that.
As far as the, you know, the legal side of things, I don't have, you know, perfect details of everything. I'm just trying to pick up where Micah left off and make sure that justice is served and that we are able to, you know, remain over her estate and make sure that it is used or allotted in the way that she would have wanted it to.
Do you know anything about the FBI being a part of this investigation now? Were you told anything about that, what they might be looking into?
So we are aware that Robeson County did come out and say that the FBI is involved, but as far as, you know, what they're investigating and the extent of their involvement, the family's not sure.
Okay. I wanted to ask you this, both of you this. So look, the main argument, and it's being put forward by Mr. Miller, and what we've seen is Micah, they say, had suffered from mental illness. Do you know anything about that? Anything you could tell us?
Before she answers that, because I think that's really important on what's going on, but I do want to make sure that y'all heard that, you know, even Sierra said that, you know, they know that the FBI is involved, but to what extent, they're unsure. The other thing too, because I was talking to Kyler about this earlier today, and explaining to them that, you know, regarding the FBI, because I know that initially when the news broke that the FBI was helping to work, you know, with the Dare to Care Africa mission, consequently the same mission that JP put in her obituary that he so poorly wrote. Don't donate to that charity, by the way. That's what he's being investigated for, him and Tom Winslow for that. And that's what the FBI is investigating on. And Kyler's like, well, the family hadn't heard of that. And my response is, well, why would they? It doesn't involve, you know, when it comes to the financial crimes, when it comes to the Dare to Care mission, when it comes to the Solid Rock Church, that doesn't necessarily involve the family. So why would the FBI bring them in on it? Now, could Micah knew about it according to the article. So could Micah have been brought in? Yes. Could Micah have been sharing information with them, given the fact that she did some of the bookkeeping and fundraising for that? Absolutely. Am I saying that that's definitely the case? No. But they're saying that it's that the FBI is involved. And again, they've been asked to take on the case as part of the death investigation as well. But this next part, what she's about to talk about is really important. So I wanted to pause before that again so we can talk about that. So I'm going to let it play.
About that, because one of the things that Mr. Miller has said is he had this power of attorney set up for that reason. What can you tell us about what Micah might be going through?
So before Micah married John Paul, she had no signs, no history, no indications of mental illness at all.
And why did she presumably agree to a power of attorney? Usually the person who sets up would have to agree to it and sign to it.
He had every way to control her, and he was very good at manipulating the situation.
And she thought that he would be doing the right thing. She wanted to trust that Mr. Miller Jr. was actually doing the right thing for them, until she got away from him and had more time, when she spent more time with us, to peel off some of those layers and realize what was going on. And then she started becoming herself again and got a job and everything else, and was doing fine, and was happy-go-lucky self again, excited about the future, and which is something he did not like. Just very terrible.
There are these allegations.
Oh, so I'll pause there real quick to talk about what they just said. And I've been saying this as well throughout, like, the videos and stuff that I've been making, talking about this. Micah, as they said, there were no signs of mental illness. There was no diagnosis of mental illness, no indications of mental illness prior to her marrying JP Miller. She did not receive a mental health diagnosis until 2017, which is the same year she married JP. And you heard what they said as far as manipulation goes. Why would she agree to the POA? Why would she agree to a power of attorney? Because he thought that she was trying to do the best thing. He was manipulating. He was controlling. And that's what people like that like to do. They have to be the one in charge. It's even one of those things. It doesn't matter that this man was having an affair on her, just like it didn't matter that he was having an affair on his first wife with Micah. None of that matters. She can't leave him. Only he can leave her. He has to be in control of the situation, because that's how people like this are. So anyways, we'll keep going.
Is that he groomed her? What do we mean by that?
He had his sights set on her from a very young age. I would guess probably 14 years old, 14 or 15 when we first came to the church. And he, you know, he made sure that he kept her exactly where he wanted her, to the point of who she married, what job she picked up after she was, you know, 18. He got her married, and then he made her his secretary and his babysitter and his let's go to lunch person, and oh, you're so beautiful.
And then when she was married, same thing, best friends with her husband, her previous husband, and manipulated the situation where he could have him doing something because he was his right-hand man, and then spend time with Micah alone, which is very inappropriate.
And to be clear about that, are you alleging that he engaged in criminal contact with Micah? And if so, again, my understanding is there's no time bar in South Carolina to bring charges. Is this something that you're speaking with about authorities with?
Hey, it's Adam from StreamYard. We have an exciting new feature to announce called Green Room, which is now...
I don't think he physically had a relationship with her until after she had already been married to Jeremy.
I wanted to ask you about something else, and this goes back to that idea of why he says, and correct me if I'm wrong, why he says he had to set up the power of attorney. He was concerned about whether Micah would be taking money, because there was this allegation that Micah was a...
Okay, I'm going to pause there, because, you know, we talked about the mental health illness. You talked about the affair and the grooming. This right here, this is going to answer a lot of questions, because a lot of y'all have heard. Let me just kind of give you a little bit of setup. I know that Jesse's kind of doing that, but basically, in this situation, a lot of people are wondering about the $1,200. So a lot of y'all know that there was a police report filed against Micah for stealing $1,200 from, again, the same Dare to Care Africa charity, the same one that the FBI is investigating. He files a police report that she stole this money from them. Okay. Police investigated it, found there was no wrongdoing, and it basically just, you know, disappeared, went away, whatever. They're going to kind of get into that and explain exactly what's going on. So this part right here, You really need to listen. You really need to pay attention to what they're about to say, because it's a lot of information on exactly what happens. And this will answer all your questions regarding that.
Suspect in the theft of $1,200 in donations for the Solid Rock, this missionary efforts. I understand you want to clear the record up on that.
That was investigated. I have seen, police excerpts on that. And from what I've seen, to best of my knowledge, it said that that was just a domestic dispute and there was no criminal charges to be filed.
Okay. And also, as far as the amount that was mentioned, Micah was having trouble with the websites releasing the money to her from the donations.
Such as Venmo or stuff like that.
Right. They were holding on to those funds, as they do for like the 3-day period or whatever, gaining interest. And so during that period where the money didn't show up yet, he was accusing her of stealing that money. And then after the fact, after she's passed, all the money showed back in except one penny.
Not to mention that money wasn't money that was donated and she was stealing it. This money was, hey, I've put $600 out of my pocket with the intention of, hey, I will be reimbursed from this because that's what she was told. Hey, spend your $600 to purchase, all the donuts that you're using for fundraising. It's a charity. We'll make sure we reimburse you. So it's not even stealing. It's reimbursement for what she's already put into.
Right.
And before I let you go, I have to ask you about this letter that came out that he had seemingly apologized to Micah for what he said was releasing a nude photograph of her on the internet. What was your reaction?
Let me pause here before that, because I want to talk about the stuff before we talk about the photograph that they're talking about. So if you caught that, basically the $1,200 was money. Some of it was donations coming in from Venmo. Some of it was coming in from like Cash App and other sources. And the bank was having an issue with that. So it was waiting for it to be funneled back in through those apps while they were trying to get that straightened out. On top of that, she was also owed a $600 reimbursement from them. And she was the one that was kind of doing a lot of the financials on that charity. And then all the money again shows up after she's passed. Everything's all finally released, et cetera, et cetera. So again, this all went through the police report, because he was like, I guess he had a gotcha there. And it came out to be nothing. And as somebody said, not to mention, he would have had all of her login details, all of her bank account details, all the security questions. He would have had all of that information, I'm quite sure, from her. So now what they're about to address is, if y'all haven't heard about this yet, so JP on Facebook, and I really want to talk about this because I think this is really important before I play this part. JP posted a topless photo of Micah on Facebook and then, took it down because I'm sure the terms of service on Facebook, the TOS people probably, got that pretty quick if he didn't take it down himself. Regardless, but here's the thing about Micah Miller. She was very religious, very Christian, and having something like a topless photo out there of her was probably not something that sat well with her. And I'm not saying that this was a reason one way or the other, but one point that I want to bring up, if you Google or search, and a lot of y'all know this, sextortion kind of things where, people will say, hey, we have these photographs of you, we're going to release them if you don't pay us X or whatever the case is, or they bully them or shame them. How many people take their own lives over that alone? Over that alone, the numbers are so high, it's so countless. It's an epidemic. People are starting to thankfully be arrested for their roles in that. But that alone could take somebody who's overly religious and modest and put them into a situation, like that. Again, I'm not saying anything one way or the other. I'm just putting that point out there. So let's go ahead. So now that I've said all that, let Sierra and Michael kind of say what they have to say.
Action to that letter.
He's a faker.
Yeah.
He likes to band-aid everything so he can still control and manipulate people.
I told him straight up, because of his behavior before, okay, now go ahead and go cry in front of your church and apologize like you always do. Mm-hmm. And he didn't during the sermon and his bombshell drop at the last point. He didn't do his fake sniveling, crying, fake stuff. Until later. But he would, numerous times, he would go in front of the church and say, I'm sorry, I did this and I did that. I'm sorry. If you don't want me to be the pastor, I'll leave. And they would say, oh, no, you do such a great job. And then it would happen again and again. Right.
Right.
And if they did stand up against him, he would threaten them with removing them from the church, or he would just straight out remove them in front of everybody. And then later in sermons said, oh, well, they just left for no reason. I don't know why they left.
Michael Sierra,
anything that comes out of his mouth, it's all backwards.
Well, Michael Sierra, here's what I wanted to ask you. This is going to be an ongoing discussion. And I was hoping, and first of all, thank you for being so forthcoming to come on to explain this.
That's pretty much it. With that, the rest of it is them asking if he'll come back, and they say as long as the lawyers say they can, then they will. But all of that is very interesting. And Greg said that it sounded like revenge. I don't know if the rules on TikTok or YouTube are the same, so we'll say corn because, you know, we're not all adults here, I guess. And I would agree. That's exactly what it is. He's not getting away. Somebody just said he's a man-child. Yeah, he throws tantrums. And I think that when you look at the video that we saw came out a few days ago with him laying in the front yard. And by the way, that's an older video. That was during his first divorce. Him laying in the yard with his fake little crying and acting like he's overdone, whatever the hell he's doing, this freaking BS act. I think that shows you an example of his manipulation tactics. And when that didn't work, he then apparently became very angry, very combative, very vindictive. And apparently that is who this person is. That's who JP Miller is. And all of this stuff, more and more stuff is starting to come out about it. So this right here is, I've said this 1,000 times that I cannot diagnose somebody, but to me, he has so many hallmark symptoms of a narcissist. You know, let me apologize. Let me, do what I need to do to make people happy, to make people, listen to what I need to say or get them to do what I need to do. Somebody said that, they love bomb. Then, if you go against them, they're going to take you down and start their smear campaign, which is exactly what he does. He did a smear campaign with Micah. He's done a smear campaign with other people of the church. He'll ridicule them in front of everybody because he's got to be the alpha dog, the one in charge, et cetera, et cetera. That is the issue with him. This is a man who recognized the fact that he could go into a church, he can call himself a pastor, he can stand behind God, stand behind Jesus, and get people's money, do what he wants to do, and basically have absolute power in the Bible Belt. That is what he's doing here, in my opinion. Because a man who is truly a man of God would not do a lot of the things that he's done. A man of God is not going to commit adultery multiple times on the people that he's with. And then when he apologizes, immediately do it again, only for the sake of wanting to not be, just to remain in the church and remain in good graces. And it's my understanding that I don't know how big, if somebody's in here that knows Solid Rock's typical Sunday congregation and amount of people that show up to church. My understanding is this past Sunday, 30 people showed up. And I promise you when I say this, I'm not making a connection. I just think it's kind of funny/ironic. 30 people showed up to church, and it happens to be that there are 29 vehicles registered to Solid Rock. So take that. It's a joke. I'm not saying that those people really all have the cars registered, but I just think it's kind of a convenient number is all I'm saying. But these are people who are still there. And I don't know the story on those 30 people. Obviously, these stories get big on social media. We hear a lot of details, but if you're somebody that might be a little bit older or you don't do social media, you might not have even seen or heard about. Like my sister, for example, she does not do news at all. When I talk about any of these cases to her, she has literally zero clue what I'm talking about. And that goes all the way from Gabby Petito to Idaho 4 to this. Not a clue at all in the world. So why they're 30, but that's a lot less of a number. And I just don't really see a way for them to come back from this. The only way that I think that he could possibly come back from this is, or continue to make money off of this, is that if he is no longer the face of the church, meaning he owns the church, he owns the building, and he disconnects himself to a point so far that people don't even know he's part of this church at all. He has to be so far removed that people don't know, so he can still collect his money. It's a problem. It's definitely a problem. The other things that I want to talk about, though, on this is there are two things that I really want to share with y'all that I think are really important. So like I said earlier in this, JP created a TikTok that lasted, I don't know how long it was actually a TikTok page, but once he started posting on it, it lasted like, I don't know, maybe 18 hours, give or take. But Micah's family does have a TikTok as well, and it's Justice for Micah. Very easy. This is the page right here. You can go follow them. Sierra has been very busy. Sierra, Micah's sister, is the one who runs this account. She's been very busy. So, you know, go give it a follow. They are posting as things come up. I believe that there will be more information coming up through her, more posting, but just make sure that you guys are aware of that. The other thing that I want to share with y'all is this. A lot of y'all have asked me, how do we help Micah? Like, how do we help this family? Well, here's what I'm going to say. This is the official GoFundMe for them. Okay. I don't typically share GoFundMes. It's very, very rare that I do, as a matter of fact, but this one is the correct one. I'm going to go ahead and drop in the chat the link for it for anybody who wants to know. I just did that right now. I can also drop it in the show notes for anyone who's watching this later. But if you want to donate, they're going to have legal fees. There's going to be fees regarding investigations, and, you know, there's going to be civil suits, and lawyers are expensive. Investigations are expensive when you have a PI and stuff, which they do. So if you want to go donate to help Micah and help for justice, this is the page that you would do it on. So y'all are aware on that. Now, that being said, that's what I have for tonight. Somebody asked who Ryan Williams is. I don't know who he is, how they're related to the family. I just know that this is the correct GoFundMe. That's what I can tell you. There is a lot more that's going to come out about this. Like I said, every single day, I think, like, okay, I'm going to go down this rabbit hole with this case, and I'm going to, you know, start talking about, like, the dad, or I'm going to talk about this Pakistan situation. Then all of a sudden, I'm hit with some other bombshell about JP that we have to talk about, because at the end of the day, no matter what other roads we want to go down with this, because there are a lot of layers, a lot of roads that you can go down with on this entire situation. The main focus is getting justice for Micah, you know, making sure that JP is exposed for the person that he is, and the rest of it will come in due time. So that's for what that's worth. But yeah, if y'all want to donate, that's a quick one. Like I said, I'll put it in the show notes when I get a moment to do that. I will be going live back on TikTok after this. But yeah, and I will also, for anybody who came in late, obviously you can go and watch this from the beginning, and I will drop it in. I'll try to tonight. In fact, I'll commit to y'all that I'll try to get it done tonight. Drop the audio of this into a podcast on 50 Words for Murder, so y'all can do that. And lastly, what I'm going to say before I drop off for tonight, first of all, thank y'all for joining. But also, again, if you are new here, you just came for the first time over from TikTok, please hit that subscribe button. I'm trying to grow this channel in the event that TikTok goes away. This is where we're going to be doing most things, should that actually happen. So, you know, please make sure to hit that subscribe button, which is basically the same as following on TikTok or Instagram or any other platform. Appreciate you guys. We will be back probably tomorrow with more updates, because this case every day gets crazier and crazier and crazier, and we learn so much more information, and so many more people are wanting to come out and speak. So I will see you guys then. Again, I appreciate y'all going up. And again, last thing I'll say, if you do want any merch, podcasts, books, other platforms that I'm on, go to justinontiktok.com. That's the best place to find all that stuff. And all books that you order from me or through TikTok shop do come signed, and I do get them out pretty quickly. So anybody orders tonight, they'll go out first thing in the morning. Anyways, you guys have a great night. Thanks for joining. And thank you guys for wanting justice for Micah, keeping her name out there, and keeping this going. I'll see you guys soon.